Well, there's a teacher that I like that says sometimes you'll have people not be standing by a stove and they'll have their hand on the stove and the stove's hot and they'll go, "The stove's hot, it's burning." And you'll say, "Well, take your hand off the stove." And they'll say, "Well, my mom kept her hand on the stove. And my aunt and my uncle kept their hands on the stove." And you go, "But it's hot, you can take your hand off." And you go, "No, this is what our family does. We keep our hand on the stove. Meanwhile, their hand's burning." And that's how so many of us, myself included at times, operate under this false sense of this is the suffering that I'm destined to, I'm doomed to, it's in my blood, and there's no overcoming that. And it might be as simple as just taking your hand off the stove.
Welcome back to the Magic of Transformation podcast. I am your host, Stephanie Zeller. I am beyond thrilled to be sharing with you today this very, very special, powerful, and inspiring conversation that I had with my friend, Davin Youngs. Davin is a performer, an artist, a creator, and a coach, amongst other things. And in this episode, we really spoke about his personal journey of finding his most authentic self, and then even more importantly, sharing that authenticity with the world. This is something that I singled him out for. I really wanted to have this specific conversation with him because as I have gotten to know him over the past few years, as he was my voice coach as well, I have been able to both learn of his past of becoming more and more authentic and shining brighter in the world. And I've also been privileged enough to see him do that even more since I have known him. And it's been such a beautiful journey to both learn about and watch. And so I'm just, my heart is so full and I'm so excited to be able to share his journey with you today. Now, everything that we talk about in today's episode about learning who your authentic self is and starting to share that version of yourself with the world, I actually have a step-by-step process for in my 10-month course called Your Life's Work. This is my most popular course and my most transformative course. You can find this course in the show notes. You can also find it at thetransformationschool.com. I am currently enrolling in this course and we will start towards the beginning of 2025. So if you are resonating at all with this episode, I would definitely check out that course and apply. I also have a free course called Overflowing Joy and Success, the Proven Method to Build a Career You Love Without the Burnout. And in this free course, I actually share with you the method that I use in Your Life's Work to help clients find their most authentic self, find clarity, and reignite passion and joy and meaning in their work without getting burned out. You can find a link to this free course to save your spot in the show notes as well. If you love this episode, please let me know by leaving a 5-star review wherever you are listening. And if you feel like this episode would resonate with somebody that you know in your life that is lacking clarity in their life, in their relationship, in their career, or struggling to be themselves out in the world, be sure to pass this episode along to them. Without further ado, please enjoy this very inspiring conversation with Davin Youngs. What drew me to you in the first place is when I first heard you on another podcast talking about authenticity with the voice.
Yeah.
And I thought that would be a good place to start because for sure, this will be new to my listeners.
Yeah.
And when I had the intuitive pull to search for somebody to help, I guess, liberate my own voice, that was why I sought you out, was because of that conversation.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's so many ways that we can dive into authenticity, but because this is something that you really excel at and see and teach and help cultivate and have cultivated in yourself, I thought we could start there. So can you describe how the voice is expressed authentically versus inauthentically?
Yeah. That's a great question. And I think, you know, that word is so often used and it's also so mysterious. Like what is it, the essence of that word? And I think that authenticity is something that the individual experiences first and foremost, right? And so we know this experience of feeling in alignment, and feeling true and feeling honest and feeling free and feeling liberated and feeling authentically expressed. simultaneously, we know what it's like to withhold, to feel like one is protecting or covering or hiding. And so it's not so much like a something that one could stick in a bottle, but it is this ongoing exploration of experience. And for me as a kid, and just to give a little context to the listeners, you know, my story, if I were to talk about it in really broad strokes, is I grew up in a small town with a father for a minister, and I had a natural gift from a young age of singing. And so I found myself at a young age singing in front of church, and then also performing at school and feeling really driven as a singer and a performer. And in hindsight, one of the things that's so complicated and interesting about that is I grew up in a small town, conservative environment, and I was a queer person. And the irony of this is the way in which I found affirmation or found the potential for feeling like acceptable in the community was to perform. And so I pretty much made it my mission to do that at a very high level. I don't think that that was exclusively driven by the desire to hide from the truth. But in hindsight, I think that that was a really big factor in that if I sang well and, you know, I got up on stage and people were really like, wow, impressed with what I did. There was a safety that I felt within my community. And I mean, it really worked, you know, because I was really good. I worked really hard and I did all the things and did all the competitions. But that sort of came to a head when I became an adult, and the sounds that I was making with my voice, and these were particularly at that point in time, classical operatic singing sounds, they were pointing me down a path that didn't feel like one I wanted to pursue. And when I started to pull that apart, what I noticed was, is there was a somatic experience to these sounds that as I learned more about voice technique and how the voice worked in the body, when I was making these impressive sounds that people in my hometown would have clapped and applauded for and potentially loved me for, they didn't actually feel good in my body. There was a feeling of pushing. There was a feeling of always doing the most. And there's a fatigue that came with that. So, so much of my adult life has been about trying to figure out what it feels like to pull back and to do less, because I don't need to do that for love, because I don't need to do more for love. Again, in broad stroke terms, in the voice, that sounds, you know, I'd say inauthenticity feels like constriction, tension, tightness, manipulation, squeezing, pushing, whereas the somatic experience of freedom, and one could relate to this without thinking about singing at all, but it feels like openness. It feels like release. It feels like letting go. It feels like something coming forth from within you without having to make it do so. And that is a very real physical sensation that singers in particular experience when they sing with a sound that is true to their body's truth.
Wow. Yeah, you said, I don't need to do more for love.
Yeah.
So many things that you just said I love. I think one thing that I really want to hone in on, though, is that we do think we have to push and do more, both as we're talking about here, just with the voice, but also in life, in order to receive the love. So it's like, it's so counterintuitive that we think the path is to push and to overexcel, and that's actually going to be what gets us more love.
Yeah.
And yet it feels the worst.
Yeah.
So it's like we're creating that suffering both in our world around us. It's like we're creating this little prison of forcing ourselves to be somebody we're not and people responding to that. And then it also feels the worst somatically in our body.
Yes.
Because that's definitely the same in terms of making the sound. And in our body, like when we are with a group of people and we're out of integrity and we're lying about who we are, or what we think, that doesn't feel good to anybody.
No.
When you started to free your own voice and shift from that essentially inauthentic sound, yet one that had previously gotten you attention and love, and you started to move into a more authentic sound. What was that experience like?
I mean, it's Dark Night of the Soul, you know, like that is the, I was reflecting on this before our conversation, and I was thinking that there was a season. So I went to a conservatory for music. I studied operatic singing. I left the conservatory. I graduated, and then I decided that operatic singing was not the path that I wanted to pursue. And not even at the time, it wasn't about like the nuance of what I'm speaking of here. I was just like, that doesn't feel like it. You know, it's not, it doesn't feel like that what I'm supposed to be doing right now. So I went to work in offices, you know, I went to work in arts administration and just a 9-to-5 office. And there wasn't anything inherently bad about that, but it definitely begged the question, who am I? Because if I'd spent, you know, the last, at that time, whatever, 21 years of my life, really clinging to this identity, but then the identity felt like it was mired with lying, inauthenticity. And then I found myself in this place that it felt like an appropriate alternative, but also was not it.
Yeah. I just want to pause on that for one second.
Yeah.
Being a coach to help people with their careers, I see this very frequently, especially when people very first start working with me. They want to leave their career, transition into something, but then they're picking something just slightly adjacent.
Totally.
And they're like, well, it's better than what I have, and I have maybe like the skill sets to transition into this. And so
yeah,
there's the false belief that that's going to be the thing.
Yep.
What made that switch feel safe to you?
Well, one of my favorite phrases that I think I coined is the thing next to the thing is still not the thing, you know? So what happens, and then I'll give you like a very practical example. A lot of people who grow up studying creativity, arts, whatever, what do they do when they feel like the career isn't viable? They end up teaching. They end up working in music business. They end up doing something, like you said, adjacent to it.
Shadow, like a shadow career. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and there's nothing inherently bad or wrong about that, but it does often feel like a way to be around it without doing it, which it actually turns into torture. So my very first job out of college was to work for a place in north suburbs of Chicago called the Ravinia Festival, which is a performance venue. And I was doing, it was a cool job. It didn't pay me anything, but it was a cool job. I got to do some arts management work and outreach and education work. Well, imagine spending your whole life wanting to be a performer, and then suddenly you're just like backstage getting water for the other performers or picking them up from the airport or whatever. It wasn't that that was bad, but it didn't feel good. You know, it didn't feel, because I wasn't there because I thought that that was like a means to an end of me doing what they were doing. I wasn't there like shadowing them to learn about their, I was doing it avoiding the fact that I didn't feel comfortable pursuing that on my own. So there's a inherent resentment that pops in, you know, or what I feel like is the biggest experience that I had throughout my professional career when it was in a traditional setting, an office setting, was just not being seen.
Yes.
I was like, you know, it just felt like no one understood how special I was.
Yes. For real though.
Which sounds
yeah.
like, you know, because, but in hindsight, I can recognize that I was always trying to make, I was always expecting of the job something that they never promised to be.
Right. And this is something I reflect to my clients all the time. You also at that juncture were unable to see yourself.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's highly frustrating. It's highly, highly frustrating. And I also recognize that it was important like step to, it was sort of like an important step of disentangling from the identity that I had clung so tightly to.
Right. But I would bet at that juncture, you didn't realize that that's what you were doing was disentangling, right? And so I feel like I want to make that clear for people too, that yeah, it's easy to look in hindsight and be like
2020.
Yeah. But two things that you just said, and I think this would be so helpful for anybody in a job that is not lighting them up, which is that you were starting to get resentful.
Yep.
And you felt like you weren't being seen. It was like almost impossible for you to be seen in that position.
Yeah.
So I feel like those are at least two clues to people in terms of like, yeah, is this the thing? I mean, do I feel like I'm really fucking bright right now and everyone's seeing me? Or resentment is so huge, I've noticed, for people in jobs they don't love.
Well, it's like any toxic relationship, right? Like that, it's very difficult to come back from resentment. You can come back from anger, you can come back from a disappointment, but when it gets into that poison place of resentment, it's really difficult to find any sort of reconciliation. But the other thing I would say is a part of my experience, which I've noticed in others as well, is there's sort of this yo-yoing, or like the pendulum swings hard, where you're like, well, maybe if I put my all into it. And then there's this resentment, like, doesn't anyone care as much as I do? And then it's like, well, I'm just going to tap out completely. And then you're like, well, what am I doing with my life? It doesn't ever feel balanced
Yes.
in its like inherent nature. It feels like in an unhealthy relationship, it's like, why are we arguing? And then, like, then you're starting
Yes.
the
Yeah.
argument.
It is so much like a relationship. I mean, it is a relationship.
And it's also something that's so common for so many people who are in those environments that it's very difficult to see. It's difficult to find peers that would be able to have that sort of conversation that might be pivotal for you, because a lot of folks are doing the same thing, or they simply don't care. So I had this very important moment in my this was like sort of at the end. So I worked in offices for 10 years. I ended up working at a university, at a music school, as an academic advisor for music students. And I was performing on the side at the time. But one day, one of my best friends, like my work wife, we were at lunch, and there were all these things I was always complaining about. Didn't anyone care? Why didn't anyone have integrity around this thing? Why don't we take down the man, go after the power? Come on. And she said to me, she's like, Davin, the thing is I just don't care as much as you do. She's like, I've got two kids at home. I'm at this job because it allows me to go home and be with them. I'm hoping I hang around long enough so that we can get them tuition reimbursement for school. It was just like, for me, it was like, you don't care as much. But then it was this big light bulb where, like, oh, you like legit don't care as much. And that felt illuminating to me, because I was constantly asking of the job and of the people around me in my mind to be something that they never wanted to be or promised to be. And that's where the resentment came from. I was putting false expectations on them because they represented, a certain level of satisfaction that I couldn't find access to. And so that was really a tipping point for me. And I'm so grateful that she said to me that she didn't care.
Is that when you realized that maybe that was not your path?
Yeah, I think I if I in hindsight, again, I always knew it wasn't my path. I just thought I was doomed to it in some way. Like, I just felt like I had given up on the first path that I had wanted to pursue because it didn't feel like it pointed in the right direction. This seemed like the practical aspect. I mean, particularly when we're talking about jobs, this is one of my favorite. When I worked at the university, like, I didn't make very much money at all. And I had a great job in terms of, like, I had lots of flexibility, I had great health insurance, and I had good vacation. And people would tell me that all the time. They'd be like, well, you have good health insurance. They'd be like, oh, you have a lot of flexibility in your schedule. And so that story and that narrative, like, I would go to work and be miserable for 7 hours because I had health insurance.
Yes, yes.
Or because I could go on vacation, even though I didn't have much money to spend on vacation, at least I had the time off. And so I laugh at myself in hindsight, because that becomes a very dominant narrative around, like, security, the things that are important to other people. That story got imposed upon me, and I believed it. I really believed it. And I thought that everything else was probably like an unintelligent risk, a risk that someone who is not wise would take. So it was in those conversations. And then outside of that, I was building my voice coaching business, that when that started to, like, gain momentum outside of my 9 to 5, and then I had conversations, like, with my friend, where she's like, why do you care so much? That's where it clicked to me. I was like, oh, maybe I meant to do something on my own. And maybe the thing that really felt important to me is centering my own creativity. Because that was really what the whole pursuit was always about. Singing, I really believe, for me, singing is like a spiritual calling. But the singing is even like one level up from the desire to be a creator.
Yeah.
It just happens to be that the voice is the thing that, I've been divinely called to focus my attention and energy on, but it's about new creation. And that's where I felt, in hindsight, so stifled throughout all of those years.
What was happening with your actual voice during that time?
So this is the cool part of the story, is I was miserable. So I was performing, and I was like performing in professional choirs. I would get hired to do like weddings and funerals. I'd sing for pay at churches. I did professional work. It was always outside of the 9 to 5. And then I was building this like voice studio, and that was very much like, oh, I'll make some extra money. But I recognized really quickly that, and I'll talk in very specific like singing terms. I studied classical singing. Most of the people that wanted to come work with me as a teacher did not want to sing classical music, you know?
Yeah.
And I recognized early on, I didn't know much about what they wanted to do. And it's hard to realize that. Your ego doesn't love to know that. But then in 2014, I got invited to come to a conference for voice teachers who teach contemporary commercial music. Now, the irony of this is that I did. That was pretty much exclusively what I did. But I never really become expert at it. And at this workshop, I was invited to perform for a teacher named Jeannie Levetri. And when I performed, I sang Michael Bublé's Feeling Good, which to me felt like a way to be in sort of like my classical sounding-ish stuff, but venture into the pop realm. And I got done with singing for her. And she said to me, wow, that was interesting. And, you know, that was that I will always reflect upon that as like a turning point in my life, because I was humiliated. But I also knew she was right. I knew that she was right. And later on, we had a conversation and she said to me, you don't know your voice, because if you knew your voice, you wouldn't push it like you do. And that was the first time someone external had articulated what I was feeling for all these years, that pushing, that bravado, that big heroic sound. It wasn't Davin. It was like something Davin could do, but it didn't feel good. It didn't feel honest. It didn't feel true. It didn't feel artistic. It just felt impressive. And so that was the very first time that someone said that to me, and that unraveled everything for me and sent me on a whole path. And that was the real tipping point into actually stepping into full-time work as a teacher and a coach, because I did all this work with her to, I don't know, reorganize my voice in a way that felt more honest.
Wow. That's wonderful. There's so many, as you know, there's so many parallels to life with that. It's
yeah.
like,
I'm giving, yes.
Do you feel like it was your work with her that where you actually started to find your authentic voice?
Yeah.
And then as you were doing that, was that unraveling things in your life as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about that.
So the thing I recognize too is that time while I was working in the office, that was also a time where I was coming out of the closet. It was the time where I was exploring, like, you know, relationships. And when I met her, I was finally comfortable being gay. So that was, again, I look back and see that the universe only gives you what you're ready for when you're ready for it. And so it was so multi-layered. You know, we talk about, like, I wasn't happy in the office. I wasn't really comfortable in my skin as a gay person. I didn't have like good relationships. I, you know, and so that interconnectivity with my voice, by the time I met her, I was so much more settled in who I was as a person that I was actually able, you know, I even think about this from a nervous system standpoint, I was able to be in my body to recognize how uncomfortable I was in it. And that then started to do two things, which I know you're familiar with. My business took off. Like, when I started to really get things aligned with my own voice, and then I was helping others, I was like crushing it. Like, I mean, you know, I was really, and I felt so confident. I was able to create real change. But other areas of my life, like familial relationships, just like how I wanted to be in the world, there was a greater tension around all of that. There was greater, the word that I often think of is, it felt itchier in those areas. Like, it just felt like man, is whack-a-mole of like, well, this isn't how I want to be, and that's not who I want to spend time with, and that's not how I want to dress. And and that's where it was such an interesting dichotomy of like, okay, this one portal, this one channel was opening, but the others felt like super complicated. And if I look back at my life, every time I've made significant shifts or changes, one of the hallmarks of those is you lose relationships. You maybe change physical location. There are new challenges that pop up that in some ways beg you to get in touch with your inner being, your inner knowing, and really honor your truth. And so at that time in my life, I was sorting out so much stuff. But it's also the time in my life where, I've been in a relationship now for 15 years, and it's when my relationship came into real maturity and became into more truth with my partner. And also just like friends that felt aligned. I also, I was singing professionally in churches. And although I wasn't subscribing to those religious belief systems, I recognized at the time that that then wasn't a place I was supposed to be spending time. And I sang in professional choirs, and I never loved doing that. I always felt like I was muting my voice to blend in with others, and that wasn't really who I wanted to be. So I gave up singing in choirs. And those seem sort of inconsequential, but at the same time, you form your identity around these different aspects. And so when you give them up, it feels like a big deal in the moment.
I like the way you just laid that out because it sounds like you kind of did this all sequentially. I mean, at the time, I'm sure it felt like chaos, but you were doing things like one at a time. And something that I find, when clients go through especially my longer program that's 10 months long, they change a lot from the beginning to the end, some more than others. And something that I found that some of them experience is their authentic self is being revealed. And then there's a period of time that they go through, and some of them, I don't know because I don't follow up with all of them, but some of them, I don't even know if they move out of it totally. But it's like there's this period of time where they know, like, okay, my true self is different from who I've been portraying to the world. And they start trying to figure out a way to be authentic while still hiding.
Yes.
And it's like they're trying to grapple with like, well, but how can I do it without actually really letting anyone know who I am? And like even sometimes hiding things from their partners and like their likes and dislikes. And it's like they're bargaining, like how can I still stay hidden and yet shine? Like, so first of all, I guess I'm curious just what you would say around that.
Well, one of the curious things about my past too is like I used to, after college, when I wasn't singing much, I was a photographer. So like there was like a season where I was obsessed with photography, and I even did like gallery shows. And like it was great. It was fun, but I totally recognize it as me avoiding the thing that was like really calling me. It was a way for me to creatively express myself. No harm, no foul in doing that. But I laugh at it because I was like, what was I doing? Like trying to show in galleries. Like, I mean, I did took nice photos, but it was like, it was that sort of avoidance. It was a way of hiding without seeming that way to the outward eye. But I just think like, I mean, I really believe that any of us can only do what we're ready for when we're ready for it. At the same time, my experiences when I work with clients like you is people are always closer than they think they are.
100%.
Like the switch, the shift, the change is not as far away as they believe it to be. And the belief that it's going to be like a dramatic, I talk out both sides of my mouth. I'm like, it was a dark night of the soul. But also, the reason that I can say that is because it was liberating and freeing. And a lot of times, when I've made big shifts and big changes, the people that love me the most, they reflect back to me that that made sense. Like that should be the thing that I do next. And some of those things would be things I would be afraid to tell anyone. And then they would go like,
Okay, duh.
yeah, sure, whatever, go do that. And that is always such a funny thing to me. I think by and large, most of us have like one or two people in our head, maybe from our past or maybe from our current life, that are the voice of criticism around big change. For me, it was my mom. You know, like a lot of the shifts and changes I've made, well, you know, go way back. I remember my mom said to me, the very first job I ever left, she goes, she did not understand why I would leave a job if I had a job. You know, but it's a generational thing. Like I get it, but that was cooked into me. That was like baked into me. That's the kind of like lack of risk I was willing to take. And so even doing that was going against her expectations in a way. And so we do this as we step into adulthood. But then when I stepped into the next job, I was like, oh, this is way better than the other one. She doesn't know what she was missing, you know? And that's where I think that when you can start to identify the singular voice, sometimes that voice is someone you don't even know. It's like someone who you think this is what they would think of the choices that you've made, and you let that be the dominant narrative of the story. And I would say that the quicker you can identify those voices and really ask yourself if they're yours, is that really what I think about this? I think that the faster you'll be willing to make certain shifts and changes. This can even come down to an example would be posting on social media. A lot of people are posting on social media for someone else. And I'm guilty of doing this too. It depends on what your expected outcome is. But a number of years ago, I had a realization that there was a friend of a friend that in my mind would inhibit what I would post because I thought she would judge me. Now, I wasn't even close to this person, but it was like I knew she watched what I did. And so I recognized, like, what am I doing that for her for? And it wasn't even my, like, it was not mine, but it was holding me back from making these really simple choices that would, again, help me step into more authenticity. So I think just listening to the voice and asking, is that mine? Is that the story I'm giving myself? Or is that something that's been given to me, or I've even assumed, I've presumed?
I think when people are holding back, like maybe they're feeling an authentic part of themselves, but then they don't want to share that with anybody, with the world, or they don't want to experiment in that space. When I start to question like what's going on there, there's always feels like to me a narrative about how their whole world is going to unravel and everything's going to fall apart. And what I try to articulate, though it's very hard if that hasn't happened to you in a way, is that if that happens, which some oftentimes it doesn't, right? Like we're making it a bigger deal than it is. But if that were to happen, that would actually feel better to you in your body than the insane tension you're holding right now to pretending and people pleasing and being someone else.
Well, I just am coming off a coaching call earlier that speaks directly to this. So I'm working with a public speaker, and this person has a lot of trauma in their past, like legit refugee trauma. And they were telling me that before they go on stage, they feel like they're going to throw up and they feel a lot of tension in their chest and like their throat's closing. And then, so we were doing some exercises that were all intended toward bringing them back into their body, like just starting to notice that. But the first question this person asked me was, well, you know, I like to also get like hyped up before I go on stage. I want to actually have an escalated heartbeat. And, you know, and I watched their mind justify the sensation of discomfort that comes from anxiety and fear as a means to an end. And I said, well, look, it very well might be true that that's been a part of your formula for success because they've been successful. I was like, but could you imagine an experience where before you got on stage, you felt at calm and at ease in your body? And that after feeling that calm and ease, there was an energy of excitement that welled up within you that wasn't about fear, that really was about anticipation of being successful. And could you imagine that after that experience of calm and ease and excitement, that then you crushed it, you nailed it, and people went ballistic over how awesome you were. And it was funny because this person was resistant to that. And, you know, all I can say is that you can only know that experience when you've had it. You can only know the experience of liberation from the tyranny of fear, anxiety, dread, self-doubt that you've been living under once you've had it. But let people like, you know, you and I share with the world, It's not necessary. It doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't have to be a struggle. Your struggle will present itself in ways that are necessary, but you need not cling to it to find success. In fact, the faster you can move through it, the more freedom that you'll find more quickly, the more efficient your path to freedom and liberation and transformation. But we so often get, well, there's a teacher that I like that says sometimes you'll have people, and they'll be standing by a stove and they'll have their hand on the stove and the stove's hot and they'll go, "The stove's hot, it's burning." And you'll say, "Well, take your hand off the stove." And they'll say, "Well, my mom kept her hand on the stove and my aunt and my uncle kept their hands on the stove." And you go, "But it's hot, you can take your hand off." And you go, "No, this is what our family does. We keep our hand on the stove. Meanwhile, their hand's burning." And that's how so many of us, myself included at times, operate under this false sense of, this is the suffering that I'm destined to, I'm doomed to, it's in my blood, and there's no overcoming that. And it might be as simple as just taking your hand off the stove.
Love it. We've both, you and I have a, we, I know this because we've talked about them before, but we've both had experiences where, as we have been our authentic selves in a new way, it's been, we've had experiences where it has been chaos and we have had the loss of things. And then we've also had experiences where we thought it was going to be
Yes.
insane and terrible. And then, like, nothing really happened. Like, it was like, wow, like, oh my God, I was working myself up for years. And then nobody gave a shit or whatever.
Yeah.
I would love for you to essentially, I guess, contrast it to, and maybe even through example of, because I think that in almost every situation, both are probable.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I think it is actually both. Like, we'll do something
Totally.
and a lot of, like, a lot of people we thought would care don't care. And then sometimes it's even like the people we thought would support us don't all of a sudden. And like, so it's a mix of both. And what I want to give people is an idea of, like, no matter what it is, you can traverse that. Like, you can walk through it.
Yeah.
So if you could share some of your personal experiences with those.
Yeah. Well, I have to just continue down the path of Davin's story. I built this voice studio. I hired people to work under me. I had, like, I was working so many hours a week. I quit, I quit my full-time job. I was making more money than I had ever made before. That's actually, like, I always reflect back to my story about, people saying, "Well, you have health insurance and you have flexibility." Within 6 months of leaving my full-time job, I doubled my salary
Yeah.
at my old job. So that's so funny to me. But then what happened next? Well, 4 years later, your boy burned out. And that was a really important and fascinating time in my life because I had been pursuing my truth, hadn't I? Not really. Like, that was another way in which I had found this impressive identity with the success of my business. And I was singing, wasn't I? No, I was primarily helping other people sing. And I still wasn't centering my creativity. So in 2018, after about a year of what I call feeling soul tired, I kept working less. I'd go on longer vacations. I'd do all these things, self-care, and none of it felt like it restored me.
Yes.
So I went to therapy and had a lot of conversations and spent a lot of time talking to my partner. And eventually I was like, I need a break. Like, I need, like, an existential break. And so I decided I would take what I called my radical sabbatical. I decided I would take 3 months off from coaching or teaching. I pretty much shut everything down. And this is one of those seasons of my life where I had been doing this creative project where I was using improvisational singing in leading community singing, but I was also working with what are called looping devices. So I would loop my voice and create these improvised patterns, and then I would add effects on my voice. And
Which are amazing, by the way.
yeah, cool. Yeah.
I'm going to put some of those in the show notes. Like, so beautiful. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. And I was doing this on my own. I was just doing it quietly in my studio. And during this season, this 3 months, I literally thought I'd vanished from the planet. I thought no one cared about me. But I also had this strong urge to bring what I was doing to a space that would be something like a sound bath, to take the idea of a sound bath or an immersive sound experience, which if people aren't familiar, it's where people kind of go in and lie down and let the music or acoustic sounds like engulf you, sort of bathe in the sounds as a path toward healing and transformation, often found in yoga and meditation studios. But I was interested in bringing this specific take on that, where it would center my voice and loop in. Well, I told you I was raised in a very conservative environment and was taught to be very suspicious of, and I love this term because it makes me laugh, of anything that was new agey. So anything outside of the like sort of Christian canon of understanding, I was taught to be very suspicious of. Now, mind you, my personal journey, I was very actively involved in exploring Eastern religious traditions, philosophical traditions, many, many years since I was a teen. But I wasn't very public about that. And so when I thought about taking this sort of like new agey endeavor into the public, I was really worried about what my parents would think. And it's crazy because I was like in my 30s, and it's crazy to think that that was like such a dominating force in my life. Not just my parents, but they were like the biggest factor, but my family, like what they're gonna, he's doing what? And this was one of the things that when I started doing it, and the first time I did it, people had the experience and they were like, that's really cool, David. Like, you need to do more of that. And then I sort of started to go public with it. No one in my family cared.
Yes.
They like legit. They're like, okay, I don't get that. Okay, it's weird, but it was not offensive to them in any way. And for a good year, like I had a story that this was going to be a big deal to them, like that they were going to be perplexed by the choices I had made and would think that I was just like falling off the deep end or something. It was not like that at all. I mean, to this day, they still don't really get what I do, but they just didn't give a shit. They were very passive about the whole thing. So that's a good example of, I thought it was going to be a really big deal and it wasn't.
To your point of what you were earlier saying of who's the voices in your head, like in that case, it was your parents and your family, right?
Totally.
But, and this is something I'm reminding my clients of all the time, even if your parents, well, first of all, even if like they're no longer living, or if they've totally changed and they're not the same parents as they were when you were growing up, and you're like, I don't know why. I have clients say this to me, like, I don't know why I'm worried about what my parents are going to think. They're like my biggest fans. And it's like, you've internalized the voice that you heard when you were growing up, and that's what lives inside of you now. So it actually, that's what you're at most in conflict with internally. Sometimes it actually is the real life parents.
Yeah.
But I also see a lot of people that either their parents have passed on or their parents are in support of them now, and yet they're still battling those voices. So a lot of times it just takes the doing to break free from that. But
yeah. And that comes back to the somatic experience, because that fear originates in the body, right? Like that's an experience of a lack felt sense of safety. And that's what sort of the story unfolds from there. But the other thing to just mention about that too, is a lot of times those messages are not explicit.
Yeah.
It's not anything anyone has ever explicitly said to you. It's the implicit messages of your family. It's the rules and regulations that no one says, but this is just how we do things. And I think those are so strongly imprinted in our being. It's you don't even recognize most of the time how much those are guiding the choices that you make, until you break free from them because you feel really uncomfortable in doing so. It feels like, you know, again, have I forsaken my community? Am I going to be banished from the tribe? What are the consequences for doing this? And you're like, well, no one even has ever said that. Why is this a big deal for me? Because it's somewhere you've started to believe that it would be, you know, you perceived that it would be. And so I think that that's a really fair experience. It's a part of growth and growing up. But the other just really quick part of that story is during that season where I'm alone in my studio and I'm looping, I literally, like I said, I felt like I banished from the earth. I felt like I had forsaken my identity. I didn't know who I was. I did very literally lose friendships during that time, because I have one friend in particular. I remember when I said I was going to do this radical sabbatical, I remember at a party, her looking to me and just going like, so what are you going to like do? And it felt in hindsight, I can see that it was, you know, her projection of her own fear around her experience on me. But in the moment I was like, oh shit, what am I going to do? You know? And then I saw that friendship in particular actually faded away, because by making this break, I had traveled down a path that wasn't in alignment with the life that this person was living. And there were a number of relationships like that. So it was very difficult in that regard, but it's that difficulty that I can see freed me. Like I became so much less tied to the egoic understanding of who I was. And it was, I did stupid shit. Like I bleached my hair blonde. You know, it's like these things that we do to try to like catch a glimpse of ourselves in a different way. And I can only laugh at myself now because it's like, I can see it. But at the time you're like, I'm going to do this radical thing.
Yeah.
And now, you know, now it seems like so crazy that that was such a big deal to me at the time, but it was part of my process.
Yeah. When you're with a group of people, like let's say even today, where maybe they're very different from you, how do you maintain like your integrity with your authentic self? Like, how do you continue to be yourself, even with people that may like very likely judge you or be like, ugh, what are you about?
Well, I encounter this routinely because one of the things I do is bring collective singing experiences to the corporate space. When I first started doing this, and this is so, I giggle at myself, but I used to try to dress for how I thought people who spoke in corporate spaces would dress. And I look back at some of the pictures of myself and I'm like, what are you wearing? But I recognized really early on the discomfort that I felt like. And it, you would look at me and be like, whatever, it's just like a shirt and pants. But it's not something I would choose to wear if I were being like Creative Davin. It's something I would choose to wear to go to the corporate arena. And I started to catch a glimpse of other folks that were successful in this realm. And I noticed, for instance, with clothes, they were often the most flamboyant people in the room. And then it occurred to me one day, I'm like, oh, they're getting hired because they dress like that. Like they're getting hired actually because they're the weird one, because they are outside of the norm. And this is a conversation I have to have with myself routinely, is I'm very literally being asked to show up because I'm weird, because I'm different, because I'm strange. And if I can just trust in that truth and not shield myself from the discomfort, because I still don't, it doesn't feel comfortable to walk into a room and look different than everyone. You know, that's not, there's no one on this planet that takes pleasure in being the odd one out. But what is on the other side of that discomfort is this liberatory freedom where you're like, oh, I'm not playing by the same rules. Therefore, I don't have to behave in the same way. And in relationship, it turns out that some people are going to be tap out real fast. Others are going to want to dig real deep because you're going to have connected just by showing up in different clothing, to use this superficial example. You'll have connected with something that is pinging within them that's going like, I don't feel comfortable in these khakis either. You know, like there's a part of me, like I want to be the most flamboyantly dressed person in the room. I want to get up on stage. And that's remarkable. I did a gig recently where I was just sort of marveling at how by me just showing up being who I am, people disclose really personal things to me about their family, about their kids doing music, about, you know, this time at their dad's funeral where someone sang. And I just am privy or even have access to any of that because I'm just me doing me, you know, and if I were to try to shield that, I would miss those conversations that make me feel deeply connected in a community that I feel like an outsider. So it's not easy. It's something I've had to grow into, but I keep leaning further into the weird because it honestly keeps getting me hired.
Yeah.
It's more than that, but I'm just teasing. But yeah, but that it does feel like that in a way.
When you reflect back on when you first started and you were, okay, I'm going into a corporate setting, so I need to look corporate, and you were testing those waters versus the way you do it now, how do you feel different from situation A to situation B, and how do people respond to you differently?
I think that there's a nuance of understanding. The me that is trying to fit into a box, that's trying to play a role, is able to foster more superficial connection. But the me that shows up being a little odd or different fosters deep connection with fewer people. And that is a more significant, desirable experience for me. And then the other thing too is just like, if I look back and I think about how I behaved, or, you know, just to keep clinging to this example, how I looked, it's like disappointing to me. It doesn't feel, I don't look back fondly on that. But the situation I'm telling you about, I just think about this one woman telling me about her kid playing the saxophone. Like, I love that. Like, I love that that was a part of my experience in that corporate environment. And I recognize that that type of conversation she might not have ever had in a place like that, were it not be for me to show up and sing and dress a little different. So I look back with a certain level of fondness and pride in how I have shown up. And then I think the other thing too is just the actual comfort within myself. Like, there's a, again, and not to belittle the discomfort of being the odd one out, but that is a quickly shake offable feeling that can lead quickly into a sense of like, yeah, this is me. It's true. It's in alignment. It's my integrity. There's a comfort that in that doesn't need anyone's approval.
Yeah.
It just is.
Yeah. So what about in social settings, or maybe like even as you were shifting more into like the spiritual space, or when you came out, or just any of these times where, because I feel like the exposure of our authenticness is kind of an ongoing journey. So in any of those times where maybe you were with a group of people, you know, it's like you think about like the group of people from your hometown or something, and if you were to just go and sit with them now and how different you would be.
Yes.
How do you show up in situations or settings like that?
Well, I don't know how to say this without, it sounds like it lacks humility, but I just don't give a shit much anymore. Like, there's this aspect of it, when you step into a certain level of authenticity,
yeah,
you don't think about it. Like, you just,
okay. So like, let me phrase, yes. And what about when Davin first started doing it?
Right. Yeah. So, cause that's what I was going to say is like, there's a sense of inevitability. Like, I can't help, but now I'm at this point where I like can't help but it, but there is this, like for anyone who's ever come out of the closet, it's this ultimate severing with what you have believed that society expected of you to be the natural progression of your life. So in that respect, I'm so, so grateful to have had that experience, because it sort of forced me. I mean, don't, like, I love people to love me. Like, you know, yeah. I grew up performing, and I put a quarter in me and I'll do whatever just so you like me. So that was a death for me to have to show up with the possibility that people wouldn't like me. The thing is that has almost never happened. Like, it has almost never happened. There are plenty of people who don't quote unquote agree with my lifestyle in my hometown, whatever, but they also think that everything that I'm doing is really cool. And so there's this aspect of like not needing for folks to love all of me, to be able to hold space with them socially. And that is, again, one of the gifts, but it was like a certain level of courage that I needed to muster on the front end. But again, I'll go back to what I said earlier, is it always feels like a bigger deal in your head than it ends up being in reality. And what happens is you have that one conversation with someone at a bar where you talk about meditation. And then you recognize, you know, you think like, wow, that person has probably never had that sort of conversation at a bar. And it felt really good. Like, it felt really good that we talked about that together. And then you start to go into another situation. You're like, I wonder if anyone else here wants to talk about some of this stuff. And it sort of builds on itself. There's a confidence that when you can muster that courage to have that first conversation, there's a confidence that comes with it. But it does take, you know, pulling the Band-Aid off at first.
Yeah.
And I recognize that that is one of the things that inhibits so many people in situations. But like I said, it's very difficult for me to relate to that now because it feels like I can't help but do this when I show up.
Yeah.
Whatever this is.
Yeah. I have the same experience where sometimes I'm just like I have to check myself because I'm like, oh yeah, like I've been doing it for so long. It's
Yes.
to me that does feel easy now and I don't get it. Like I don't get
Yep.
what the holdup is. And then I'm like, oh yeah, in the beginning it was really hard. And a personal exploration I've been doing is just recently is kind of like, what parts of myself am I still hiding? Are there,
Yes.
you know? And so, you know, when I see this, I'm thinking of Jim Carrey, for instance, like when he kind of unlocked deeper aspects of himself, he became so, so creative, like just started painting. And I think the more we move into our authentic selves and the more we allow ourselves to shine and the more we unlock our just creative life force energy, and the more we're going to be creative and the more we're going to flourish. And then with every layer that comes up, we also have this choice of like, who do I reveal that to? How do I reveal this? In the last year or two, are there aspects of yourself that you feel like have been new that you've revealed?
Yeah. And with that, new insecurities, you know. So a big part of my last couple of years has, you know, both of these endeavors that I've mentioned, the immersive sound experiences, which is called The Reset. I've been able to do that on really large stages, and it's been amazing. You know what's come with that? More self-consciousness about my looks and about age. And those are two things that intellectually I would love to tell you that I was just like totally cool with, but being seen on a bigger stage, that has been a shadow that has really come up for me. And it's super annoying, but it's also, I recognize just the other day, I caught myself like in this spiral of thinking, and I recognize that it's also an indicator of growth, that there is like, it's not that it's like necessary for me to indulge it, but it's also like a natural part of being seen on a broader scale. That it's something else to consider that I haven't considered before. So that's a really big one. And then also just for me, like financial aspects of all of this work, my relationship to money has had to take a major shift in the past because I come from small town conservative and always environment. And I'm wanting to swing bigger now. I'm wanting to play bigger. And I recognize that we are the sum of the people that are closest to us in terms of like language and what's acceptable to talk about. And so there are some conversations, particularly around money and things like that, that I'm just trying to be more bold in my willingness to step into, because I know if I keep it just like an internal conversation, it won't come to fruition in the ways in which it might. So it's not about, I'm not talking about like flaunting wealth, but I'm talking about not being fearful to talk about money.
Own it.
Yeah. And just like, and say, I want to be successful and I want to make a lot of money doing these things. And I want to do it in a really balanced way. And I want to feel good in my body while I do it. And I want to be proud of the work that I create, you know, while, you know, making a lot doing it. Like, that was never a conversation that I was privy to at all growing up. And so being an adult and being willing to say that is a big deal to me.
Yeah. And that made me think about when people start to discover, like, let's say they're unhappy in their life and they start to do some personal work to discover, why am I unhappy? What's going on here? Who am I really? What has been your experience with, I mean, that's a perfect example around money, where you've had some ingrained, conditioned beliefs around money for a long time. And now you're realizing, hold on, I think actually my authentic self wants to be really fucking wealthy and have all this financial freedom and make a lot of money and feel really good doing it. And like, that's a part of myself I need to own.
Yes.
And move and shift through that. And, you know, I try to hold my own personal identity very, very loosely and let myself change and evolve literally from day to day sometimes. But that's particularly hard for people that are just starting out or new to that, or they have a huge realization. I mean, even the money thing can be a big
realization, because people's identities can be so wrapped up in like, this is who I am. Or especially I work with a lot of people like on linear track careers, like doctors, attorneys, that kind of thing. And that's their whole identity.
Yeah.
What would you say around that experience for you of kind of loosening your grip? Because I think there's a existential crisis that occurs of, oh my God, I'm going to be annihilated here if I let go of this aspect of my identity, versus holding it loosely and letting it transform.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say holding loosely, because that's exactly what I was thinking, is like you have to loosen your grip, like, because a grip is not sustainable. You know, like if you grip your fist right now, that's not something that you can do for a long period of time. It doesn't feel good. The other thing, and this is can take us back to our original sort of analogies with the voice, but if you were to take your hand and your palm and you were to take a really strong grip right now, when you let go of the grip, your hand doesn't automatically open up. Your hand stays in that grip position. You have to do other exercises that pull it out back into an open palmed way. This is very true with the voice. A lot of people make sounds with their voice that are chronically constricted. And so it's not as simple as just saying relax.
Yes.
It's doing things that pull you in the opposite direction. And that is really difficult. But what happens is you start to realize that life is more malleable, that life is more flexible, that feeling of gripping and tightening and squeezing was actually suffocating the whole time. You literally couldn't breathe as well when you were squeezing. And so when you start to feel that opening up, that expansiveness, again, I just think it's addictive. Like, I think that you start to, if you can catch one glimpse of yourself, I mean, look, this is why people do psychedelics and things like this. If you can catch one glimpse of yourself outside of the small reality that you've created, it will mess you up royally in the best way, because you'll start to go, well, if I can do that, what else can I do? Or if I'm not that, then maybe who am I? And I think that this is where momentum comes in, because you start to go, oh, but then what about this? But then what about this? And then people start reflecting back to you. Oh, you seem happier.
Yeah.
Things seem easier. I don't know what the hell you're doing, but you look happy. That is where it starts to take shape. But that initial gripping, keep trying to do it.
Well, shit, people do it. Well, I think the interesting thing is, like, especially in people's careers, but also in relationships, right? Like, there's a gripping. Yeah. And I think what ends up occurring is the pendulum that you were talking about earlier, where people will grip until they go into total burnout. And then they're just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
And that's like the not being able to grip anymore. But then what I see people doing is similar to kind of what you did. And this is for sure what I did for a while as well, which is like, oh, okay, I just need to go on more vacations, or I need to take more breaks. And,
get a massage.
Yeah. And that's a real like misunderstanding of what burnout is. Like, people think burnout is, I just was working too much, versus like there's a lot of unaligned things in my life and I'm forcing and I'm pushing, and that's what's really causing the burnout.
Yeah.
But I see this, unfortunately, really frequently. Like, I saw it so much in dentistry, but I have a lot of people in a lot of different careers. So it's like literally in every vocation, where there's the gripping and then there's the burnout, and then there's like the vacations and taking a break, and then there's going back and the gripping and the burnout. And then it ends up being like the alcohol and the drugs to try and alleviate some of that enormous tension. And there's another way, I guess, if there's anything I want anyone to hear, is like, there's always another way, which is like an investigation of why do I feel that way? And, you know, people are different stages, right? Like, some people listening to this are going to be like, I know parts of my authentic self and I'm hiding those parts. And then some people listening are going to be like, oh, I thought I was being authentic, but I am recognizing that there's like grippiness here. And to speak to that, how do you, I mean, you're kind of like, let's call you an advanced practitioner of authenticity at this juncture.
I'm working on it.
But how do you continue to hold space and notice like, ooh, how, like, maybe this is out of alignment? Maybe how do you do that now? And also, I mean, you mentioned earlier, like the being resentful and not feeling seen.
Yeah.
Maybe if there's any other things that were kind of coming up for you then, and then how you're doing it now. Let's start with like how, if anything else was coming up for you then that could have that people can relate to that can cue them into like, yeah, maybe something's out of alignment.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I don't know if you've read this book. Have you? Martha Beck's The Way of Integrity.
Oh my God. I've recommended it to so many people.
Yeah. So this is first thing you should do is read The Way of Integrity.
And then actually do it, by the way. Like,
yes.
Like, because a lot of people will just like, oh yeah, I read that book. Like, and then they'll tell me like, I'm done. Like, no, I did that. And it's like, but did you do the book?
Yeah.
No.
Because it is the ultimate, you know, challenging aspect of like, what does it mean to be in alignment and truth? But one of the things that I really resonated with in that book is that lying feels bad.
Yeah.
You know, like, not only does it feel bad, like in a spiritual sense, it literally doesn't feel good in your body. The problem with that is that if you haven't cultivated that awareness, you might not know it. It might feel so, you might be in this constant cycle of, you know, discomfort that it's difficult for you to recognize that. So one of the things that I would offer folks is, and this is why a lot of people come to me for singing, and maybe you can relate to this, that something like singing, dancing, what have you, and it could be a sport, something from your past, usually in childhood, where you felt super good. Like it just was something you really looked forward to. It felt really fun. It felt like it carried with it a lot of possibility. A lot of times it's associated with community or it's associated with affirmation. For me, this is always a good place for people to start. You can start by reflecting, but you might actually go back and try to do it again too, because what that does is it alerts you to the ways in which you might be hanging on that you're not even aware of in your life, because they will then present themselves in stark contrast to that.
Yeah.
Because you're going to go, oh, that felt so good. Oh, I loved dancing. I loved, you know, playing tennis with my friend. It felt so good to learn basket weaving. And then you go, but my job sucks. And you start to get this contrast. And then you start to think to yourself, if you're brave enough, if you're bold enough to accept the challenge, you start to think, what would happen if more of my life felt like basket weaving? And you recognize that there is a lived experience of the discomfort. There is a lived experience. Now, fair warning, if you ignore that long enough, which there's a whole generation of people that were taught to ignore that. They were taught to stay in their job until they retire.
Or in a relationship, by the way.
Yeah, in a relationship, yeah. Right? Yes. Where you would, you know, I'm meant to stick this out the entire time. I guarantee you it will present itself in some catastrophe. I don't know what that catastrophe is. It could be just an existential spiritual crisis. It could be a health scare. It could be the loss of someone or something significant. But there will be some catastrophe that will tell you that you ignored all the signs. If you want to avoid that, you have to do the quote unquote work to become attuned to the subtlety of the feeling. And the feeling, especially in corporate arena, you're really taught to ignore the feelings. You're taught to prioritize the thinking. But the feeling is always, always the truth of your experience. The rationalized thought is the story you tell yourself about the feeling. And so when you have fun, and I don't mean fun just like go out with friends, but when you do things that are fun, that feel good, that feel like you, that feel true, that feel in alignment, get ready, because it's going to present a contrast to the areas of your life that don't feel like that.
I want to speak to a few things you said. First of all, like in my 10-month program to help people do this exact thing, essentially, like do the actual work to discern what is going to make my life feel really amazing and what's going to help me get out of this funk. A big part of the beginning part is reconnecting to feeling good. Which is exactly what you're saying, and learning, like starting to discern what is my authentic self versus like, what have I just thought I was supposed to do?
Yeah, totally.
But I also love how you said thinking, and I know this is something that you and I have spoken about and you've struggled with. And this was like definitely part of my struggle initially. And I think is why, you know, it's like, I have several courses, but I think the courses that right now are doing the best and most people are rolling in is my intuition, like psychic course, and my Your Life's Work course, which Your Life's Work course is really about finding your authentic self. And those were the two things that I had shut down.
Yeah.
Like I had no fucking idea who my authentic self was. And I had prioritized thinking and my intellect over, like, I want to say my body.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because intuition comes through the body. But the number of people I have that are truly sick, like coming in to work with me, that have all of these, that have rationalized their suffering to such an enormous degree and made it their problem. Like, this is something that I did in both my relationships and my career, was like, I was making everything my problem. Like, oh, it's just something's wrong with me, and that's why I don't like my job, or something's wrong with me, and that's why this relationship isn't working, versus a real trust in their felt experience and their actual, like, what their body is telling them. So I love that you brought that forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this was a really, and this is actually a pretty recent wake up for me over the last few years, is that the only reason that we pursue anything is because we believe that it will give us a feeling. And that if you have that awareness, it presents the bigger question, am I able to feel that now? Like, do I have access to that now? And if I don't, what is inhibiting that? But I think, you know, for me, this is about like the money thing. This was a big, like, I don't care about the money. You know, I mean that sincerely. Like, it's not, there's no number that I care about. But what I want to feel is like, if you and I go out to dinner, I can treat you and I can buy the best bottle of wine and that I can pay for your Uber home. And I want to, you know, feel like I can go on a vacation when I go on vacation, want to go on vacation. And I feel like I don't ever have to worry about a house payment. You know, like, those are the things. That feeling is what I care about. It's not the money. But what I recognize is that if I'm telling myself this story that I won't ever have that, if I, that's probably not going to be in my lifetime. People who do create, this is a famous one, people who are creative, they don't make much money.
Yes, yes.
How many times? I mean, that is a very dominant cultural narrative and belief. If you pursue creativity, you will suffer financially.
Yeah.
That's bullshit. It's not true. It's a story that people tell themselves and they reiterate the experience because of that. But if I recognize that right now I have access to that feeling of, you know, for lack of a better phrase, richness, I start to make choices that then point me toward opportunities that actually make for a more efficient path toward wealth, you know? And that's, I've really experienced that first time. But it's not about the wealth. It's about the feeling.
Yes. Okay, so coming back to you as a advanced authentic practitioner, like, let's take the money thing, for example. How did you realize, because even the people that are listening that are like, oh, I've made gains, I've shown people who I authentically am, I have this nailed. Like I said, we're still in a constant process of discovery. And sometimes I think there's even like a shift in changing of our authentic essence that can emerge. And it's like, oh, what is here now and what wants to be expressed? How did you discover, like, wait a minute, I think there's a shift here. Maybe my authentic self really does want to make a lot of money. And then how did you move through that and move into a place of acceptance and then openness about it?
Well, and this is where, like, so meditation is a big part of my life, and the practices, not even like the specificity of meditation, but engaging in contemplative spiritual practices has been a really big part of my journey. And the reason I mentioned that is through that work, I've recognized the term practice is very important, because this isn't about flipping a switch. It's about, I think a word you use is reprogramming. You know, it's really understanding that this is a process both of unfolding, but it's also like an active process of identifying sort of the thought patterns or the habits. And so, you know, to lean into money further, I started to recognize in conversation the things that I would say that implied that I didn't have money.
Yeah.
Or that I couldn't afford something. And what happens is when you start to recognize that, you go, oh, I'm kind of doing that a lot. And if that's the story I'm telling other people, you know, that's certainly reflective of a narrative that's running throughout my mind all the time. The other thing that then happens too, is you start to recognize that that happens in other people. You start to hear it in other people and you go, oh, like, you're saying that thing, but is it actually True. And so the practice aspect is developing a mindful awareness of the ways in which how I'm living, both, in my body, in my career, in my relationships, how I'm living, identifying how that might not be aligned with where I want to be. Again, though, I want to reflect back on what I just said. Where I want to be might be more here now than I had recognized. It's not, it's is it could be as simple as identifying that the story I'm telling myself has not been true, and that I actually right now have access to that feeling that I was thinking having a lot of money would give to me. But I can't feel that feeling if I keep telling the same old story that says I don't have enough.
I want to break this feeling thing down a little bit more for people because I feel like it might not be clicking fully. So it's like if we discover that we're desiring something, what Davin is talking about is that once that thing comes into fruition, there's an underlying feeling that we are actually wanting. Or I think sometimes that can also present as an avoidance of another feeling. So it's like people that I see always on the flip side of this, always chasing money and it's like never enough. They're trying to avoid a feeling of, oh my God, I don't have enough. So it's like going 10 layers deep and discovering, what do I think this thing is going to give me that I think I currently don't have? How do I think this thing is going to make me feel? And then going through an exploration of, do I have access to that feeling now? Like if I feel like I need more money, because I want to feel like opulent in a fullness, is there a way I can create that feeling for myself now? And that goes hand in hand with manifesting, because to pull that thing to us and to manifest it, we want to be in the energy of it. So if you're in an energy of lack, you're very unlikely to attract money, which is actually like whenever I see people, it's so interesting because I was just looking at someone's Instagram profile the other day and their profile handle was "Life Sucks." And I was just like, wow, that's interesting because that person is actually manifesting that more by talking about that narrative all the time. Like that's their bias now. Like that's what they're focusing on. And I see this, I think, the probably the most honestly with money is like people talking about how either they never have enough or something that I see is like, I can't make this kind of money outside of this field. You know, like I hear that constantly with like linear track
Yes,
careers, right?
that's the most common. The golden handcuffs, the golden
Yes,
handcuffs.
and that's what gets you trapped in like a mediocre, a career that's not lighting you up is like the, well, I can't make, and I tell people like, that's not true. I make more money now than I did there. But it's like there's the with the when the blinders are on and you're so grippy to that story. So sort of a sidetrack, but it connects because it's like if that's the story that you're believing, then that's also what you're manifesting in your reality and what you're seeing. And you can't see an alternative if that's your belief. It's like putting colored glasses on. Like you can look all around, but you're only going to see that color. So doing this work of exploring this as you taking the glasses off. And also the way to start freeing yourself from it that Davin is alluding to is like going deeper and understanding, well, what is it I'm actually desiring here? How do I want to feel? Because everything we are doing is because we're attempting to essentially feel something. A lot of times for a lot of people, it's just like feel worthy or feel loved, right? But with money, it can be like, yeah, like feel safe, feel opulent, feel full, feel sparkly, whatever it may be for you. And then bringing that feeling state in by potentially doing other things or like noticing in your life where you're already feeling that. So I just wanted to break that down because I feel like I'm sure there were people listening, like, I don't understand what he's talking about with feeling.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that too. And just to, call back to the story I told earlier about the client who, before she went on stage, she felt like she was going to throw up. And, and the story that she was telling herself was that was necessary, for the experience that she, and I'm saying, could you imagine that? What if you felt really good and you crushed it, And that's where, when we get caught in sort of a small story about ourselves, it's very difficult to imagine that there's any other option, that there's any other opportunity, which goes back to why you should sing, why you should dance, why you should experience pleasure, because they alert you to greater possibility. They alert you to a more expansive view of what is possible for you to feel. It also is a pretty sure way to shift your priorities. Some of the things, like financially, that you think you need might actually change if you recognize that the feeling is not being achieved by that you're trying to, get to. So you know, the thing about wealth in particular is that people who have a lot of it, it's not impressive to them. You know, it's not a big deal. Like, it loses its the people that care the most about wealth are the people that don't have it, because a lot of times it feels like it would give you access, and there is maybe truth in that societally. But once you have that access, it's not that exciting. It's not that thrilling. The change is where the thrill actually comes from. The change is where the excitement comes from. But the other thing I'll say to that point too is, those of us who are most comfortable, the golden handcuffs that I refer to, and this is classic for anyone who's in a high-paying job, particularly in a career that promised, you know, you can name them, doctor, lawyer, whatever, a career that promised you'd spend all this money and go to school, then you get your salary and whatever. Let's say you're deep into that and now you're locked in. You got the house, you got the car, you got the kids, they're going to private school, what have you. That is one of the most difficult situations to exit, because the comfort level is a liar. The comfort level that you tell yourself about all of those things, it's the constant justification of your chronic discomfort, dis-ease, your chronic dis-ease. I find that people that have like a lot of comfort in their life and wealth have the most difficult time making changes. The people that are bumped up, they got their backs against the wall because everything fell apart, they're ready to go. But that's also, I hope you hear that as call to courage, because if you're someone that's in that situation, I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm saying that you're being called to a different level of courage through this path of authenticity. And the good news is, you actually have more resources at your discretion to make these changes. The odds are better in your favor because you've done all this work and effort to put yourself in this position. You owe it to yourself to take that and capitalize on it for your own spiritual well-being, your own emotional well-being. But it's easy to get stuck. It's really easy to get stuck.
Say more about what you mean by like using your resources.
Well, if you want to create a change and you have a savings account.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was curious if you meant, I guess, financial resources, because I was also seeing that. I mean, I figured that's what you meant, but I was also seeing that interestingly as like a almost like a capability resource, because it's
Oh,
like,
yes.
you know, like if you were capable enough to do all that you did, take out the money, go to the school, do all the things and become the blah. It should, in a way, reflect back to you like, wait, I'm really fucking capable. I
Yeah.
can literally do anything. And it's so interesting to me how it doesn't seem to do that for people, how they think like, well, I was only capable in this and that won't translate. It literally won't translate into anything. Or, you know, I see people trying to translate it to something very adjacent, like, well, I'll just get a master's in something, or I'll just do this thing that's like kind of similar. And, you know, not everyone listening, you know, dislikes their job, but I feel like this is applicable across the board, just in terms of like, I see this also with people in relationships, because I've been doing a little bit of relationship coaching as well, where it's like you've been in a relationship for a long time, and there's of course a comfort there,
Yeah.
like I want to air quote comfort,
Yeah.
right? Because the comfort is just the, a lot of times, the familiar hell.
Yeah.
And it's
Totally.
just familiar. Like that's the only thing.
Yeah. I mean, I heard recently this like sort of financial guru was talking about like one of the key components to gaining wealth is proximity to wealth. But I also think too, just like what you're saying, on a basic fundamental level, abundance attracts abundance. If you have been in a state of abundance in any capacity, it could be you have a lot of degrees, it could be that you have a lot of wealth, it could be that you have a lot of love, I don't know. You know, that is transferable. It is a skill that you have been gifted from on high, and it is one that you have taken and cultivated and earned and leaned into, and you can apply that to anywhere. But it can feel daunting. It can feel like, well, I'm good at this, but I'm not good at this. I promise. I promise. You know, like I'm a hard ass worker. Like I'm a hustler. That is the thing that burned me out. But it's also the thing that when I really feel aligned with something and I really excel at it, I know what it is to work my ass off to make it happen. I've done it. I've done it before, you know, and because I've done it before, I can carry the confidence that I can do it again. But that requires a certain level of self-awareness that, again, I think is one that people rediscover by getting back in touch with the things that make them happy. There's a confidence that comes with that. Like, maybe I could do that. Maybe I could do that. It's a curiosity from within. It's not a flip switch. It's something that wells up within you and you have to do. And then even though it's totally irrational, it doesn't make any sense. You look at your life and you're like, look what I've already done. Where else can I go?
You actually just reminded me of something else that I've seen people struggle with, like in every single field, which is where they realize that their authentic self does want something either different or, let's say, bigger. But then there's a degree of imposter syndrome that comes up when they try to step into that new identity. I mean, I remember you telling me, like, a lot of people will DJ because they actually want to be a singer.
Oh, classic. Every DJ wants to sing.
So then how have you personally made those shifts where it's like you maybe were adjacent to something and then you wanted to shift and stand in that new identity? And maybe sometimes it's just a matter of just doing it incrementally over and over again until it becomes familiar. But anything you have to say about that?
Well, I would say, you know, this is creeping up in my own life. It's what I was saying to you earlier about, like, I'm making my way onto some big stages right now. And I am not someone that routinely experiences imposter syndrome. It's not something I've strongly identified with, but I have lately. Because one of the things about this is like in my current, particularly when I'm performing, this is a little BTS, I have like a guarantee. So when I go perform at a theater, there's a financial guarantee that I will make no matter what. Now, that guarantee is not contingent upon ticket sales. But I know that in order for them to want me to come back again, the ticket sales better be good to justify the guarantee. And here's the other thing. What I'm doing is so unique and so strange and so weird. Some people aren't actually asking me to do it for that reason. But the little voice in my head goes, I better sell enough tickets to make this feel financially worthwhile. If not, I'm a fraud, right? Or if not, I'm not the real deal. And so that absolutely has been creeping up on me where I'm just like, do they, you know, even if someone tells me I've done a good job, my scarcity thinking goes, yeah, but did we sell enough tickets? Does that make financial sense for them? And again, I even hear myself sometimes leading the conversation with a venue around performing, around ticket sales sort of thing. I'm not selling tickets here. I'm selling an experience, you know? So I have to talk myself off the ledge in that regard, but it's very, very easy to do. And it's always the hallmark of stepping into a new, it's like what I was saying to you, worrying about my looks, worrying about my age, worrying about money, time. These are like the lowest common denominator fears that always creep up when you're on or in something new, on the precipice of or in something new. So I recognize that myself. I let myself have my feelings and then I go, get over it, buddy. They hired you. They hired you, you know?
Well, especially, I mean, I just want to reflect to you, especially someone like you, who I feel like part of your sort of dharma in life is to pave new paths and do entirely new things. So if you're ahead of your time, like it's going to take time for people to catch up, right?
I know. And I see that intellectually about myself. It's confusing from like a felt experience in the moment because, I mean, this is like I've seen recently some folks doing something very similar to what I'm doing. And it's that awareness of like that I have done something that hasn't been created in this way before. And then there's like a scarcity that comes in with me and like a fear that comes in with me. And that is my edge of growth is like stay in the truth,
yeah.
Stay in the path because no one can do it like you.
Yeah. Well, and that's true for everybody, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to throw that in because I can't tell you how many people I have that are like, oh, well, there's one person in the world already doing that. I'm like, yeah, there's one person in the world doing that.
It is a big world. Yeah.
Right. Like we all have our energetic signatures that people are energetically drawn to. And you have a whole host of people who are going to be, even if you were like performing side by side, right? Like there's going to be people that are just finding you super yummy.
Yeah.
That are not going to be resonating at all with the other people, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just the nature of things.
It is. And it is so fundamental in terms of, it asks us to really beg the question of, do we believe ourselves to be fundamentally good, fundamentally worthy, fundamentally lovable? You know, it goes to the core of how do you see yourself? And of course, I don't feel that way about myself all the time, But I do believe that there's a fundamental worthiness to my existence. There's a fundamental lovability. There's a fundamental goodness. I believe that I'm on a divinely driven path. You know, I don't believe that anything has happened by chance in my life. And I owe it to all of that to keep showing up and keep expressing myself through that. And the people for which that is meant to connect with, let it be. You know, and vice versa. Like, those are the people I want to connect with too. But when you're doing something new and different, the questions will feel louder. They'll feel a little stronger. They'll feel a little bit more in your face and a little bit more bold. But again, if you can just have enough awareness to know that's the sign you're on the right path, that's actually the sign that you're doing the thing. The quiet questions, we all experience those all the time. The loud questions, like, what the hell are you doing? Like the woman at the party that I told you, like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
In my face, like, just looking at me perplexed. In hindsight, I can see that is exactly why I was supposed to do what I did then, which was nothing, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. I think closing question. Oh, no, I just had another question. Okay. Two closing questions here. First, is I would love for you to just contrast. I think people have already gotten a feel for it as we've been talking, but if you kind of had to put a nice little bow around it, life before your authentic self emerged in some big ways versus life now.
The before is afraid. It really comes down to a sense of protection, hiding, and fear, and trying to shrink in the ways where I was meant to expand and trying to be big in the ways I was never called to be big.
I just love that. I want to pause on that. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, just trying to shrink around the stuff that I knew in my like deepest parts of myself that I was supposed to get big. And then there's this bravado or peacocking in ways that never felt true.
Yeah.
And I think that that's like the, you know, that just doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't satisfy. It might give a like a saccharine sweet moment. But then afterward, it feels hollow and empty.
It's like the addict. Like I compare this to addiction all the time because it's like addicts are going after the feeling like you were talking about. But when it's not the thing, it's never enough.
Yeah, never. No.
When it's not the actual thing that you're searching for, then it's never enough. And it feels like I know so many people that have had so much success and it's not enough because that's not the thing.
No, it never was. And it never promised to be. It's like the lover that never told you they were that into you, you know, and you kept going, but love me, love me.
Yeah.
But then the contrast is, I mean, the simplest way I can just say it is feeling good, like all the time.
Yes.
You know, and it's not to say that there's not discomfort, but it's just in the context of feeling good. Like it's just in the context of feeling like, even in like the deepest, darkest moments, it's just like knowing that it's woven into this greater goodness, this greater purpose. And the dark nights of the soul are so short, you know, compared to the past. They are just little dreams that pop up, and then you step out of them and you go, oh, okay, everything's okay. And also, just the other thing I will say, when I feel most in alignment, people are constantly telling me that about myself. People are reflecting that back to me. They're going like, dude, I love what you're doing. I'm so inspired by what you're doing. What you're doing is so cool, you know, and it feels good from an egoic standpoint, but it also runs deeper. It like feels like a soul's connection, like spiritual connection with the person that's reflecting that back to you. Because it doesn't make me have a big head. It just makes me feel seen.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, you get it. Cause that's how I feel too. I do feel that. Like, I feel like what I'm doing is fucking cool. And I feel like I'm in alignment and I feel like I'm in flow. And I'm so glad you recognize that. Thank you.
Yes. And just to point out the obvious here that you did start to see yourself, you did start the internal change, and then you did actually make change in your life before other people could see you, really like see you. Cause I feel like, again, a lot of people are like looking to be seen in places that they're not, that their soul's not even meant to be in.
Totally. Yeah. And that always feels like a striving. That always feels like effort.
Yes.
But it doesn't feel like the ease of like your best friend, of being with your best friend, who's just like, you don't even have to like say anything, but you can just hang and you know each other and you know when they're struggling and you know when they're happy. Like more relationships in your life will feel like that when you're not pushing and striving and manipulating and maneuvering.
Yes. Yeah, flow is possible in literally every aspect of your life.
Yeah.
Closing question is, you were describing the way that you did feel before you allowed yourself to be seen. What would you say to Davin back then?
I think that there's a sense of deep knowing within you that you owe it to yourself to pay attention to. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to the people that love you the most to not ignore, to not suppress, to not repress. And any sort of hurdle in accessing that is necessary, but the length of time that you need to engage with them is shorter than you think. This path has the possibility of efficiency. This path has the possibility of surprise and delight. This path has the possibility of abundance. And even though you're feeling this way now, can you keep hope alive, buddy? Like, can you dream? Like, can you imagine? Can you experience pleasure? Can you experience connection? Can you experience heart? Can you leave yourself open to fundamental goodness in all of your life? That sort of unconditional love, if I could just give myself that, I think that that would have saved me some of those nights of feeling real lost.
Yeah. Beautiful. Okay, if people are like, I want more Davin, where do they find you?
I'm going to give three websites, which I know is annoying, but it's my truth right now. So davinyoungs.com, you can learn more generally about me there. If you're interested in immersive sound experiences, it's called The Reset. You can learn more at theresetsoundexperience.com, theresetsoundexperience.com. And then Voxis is my corporate team building, but also just like leadership, using the voice as a tool for personal and professional growth. And that is voxisexperience.com. Those are the three places. And then you can also find me on Instagram at Davin, Davin Youngs, Youngs.
Thank you.
Thank you. I love this conversation.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check out episode number 52, which was the last time Davin was on the podcast. You will most certainly enjoy that episode as well. And if you were inspired to go on your own authentic journey during this episode, you can begin by signing up for my free upcoming course, which you can find a link to in the show notes. Or if you are ready to go all the way in, you can check out my program, Your Life's Work, at thetransformationschool.com. If you feel like there is someone in your life that would benefit from this episode, be sure to forward it along to them. Thank you so much for joining us. Until next time.